Welcome to the Rock and Roll and Coffee Show. I am Joe Sebelia. Thanks for tuning in. Please make sure to follow us on YouTube and all social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. My guest this week is Paul Liddell. Paul is the guitar player in the band Dirty Looks and Dangerous Toys. Dirty Looks has a new live CD-DVD combo out called Cool from the Speedway. I discuss this with Paul, and I also talk about Dirty Looks and Dangerous Toys, plus much more. Hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks for listening. You know what? There's a lot of things I want to talk to you about, but let's get started with the new CD, DVD.
Yeah.
Dirty Looks, Cool from the Speedway, right? That's what it's called, Cool from the Speedway. How long, now this is your first show you guys have done in a while, right?
30 years,
yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah.
So tell me about it. I mean, whose idea was this, and you know, how'd this all get started?
You're talking about the CD or the show, or because I mean, we should start by talking about the show.
Yeah.
So
tell me about the show.
The show was, I don't know, like over a dozen years in the making. Going back to when Henrik was still alive, and we were going to do a show back with all the original guys, and so that never happened, and then of course he tragically passed.
Right.
And so I thought, well, you know, there goes any hope of that happening. And then it was Jack that asked me, he said, do you have any interest in, you know, maybe doing a show, just like sort of a one-off show? So this is probably 5 years ago. Hmm. And I said, wow, you know, it'd be blast to play with you and Gene again, you know, it's been so long. So he came down, he came to Texas and to meet with Jason, and we jammed out and it was all cool. And then it was the following year, I guess that one was like 4 years ago. The following year, we decided to, think about doing a show. So we, and Gene was interested. He came down also with Jack, and we jammed out for like 2 days.
Mm.
And just to kind of see, you know?
Right.
And I personally, I think everybody in the room was personally pretty floored by how well it went and how good everything just felt to jam and everything. This is with Jason singing and with my buddy David Beeson playing second guitar.
Right, because so Henrik played guitar as well, right?
Pardon me? Yeah, Henrik.
Yeah, okay.
And talking about David and Jason, they did a Dirty Looks tribute band like 15 years ago.
What? I did not know this.
Well, it was only one show, and it was for my birthday.
Oh, okay.
At a club. Happy birthday. But they worked up. Probably 11 song set or something. And Jason played guitar for that because he played guitar too. But we decided that we want to have him, you know, just sing, and have David play guitar.
Sure.
So but anyway, so we recorded the rehearsal, which was a good thing. The rehearsals were taking place, it was about a week before the show was supposed to happen. So we had actually two shows booked in Pennsylvania, and so the week probably after the rehearsal, the pandemic started. So this was all in March of 2020.
Right.
So, fortunately, we had recorded the rehearsal, and so everybody just kind of listened to the recordings during the year and a half of downtime.
The little break.
Yeah. So we only had a chance to rehearse for a few hours in Sealand Grove before the show. And we ended up, so we ended up just playing the one show. And brief rehearsal, and then just sort of went for it. But I didn't know if this was ever going to happen again. And I thought it was pretty cool, and it was worth it to me to like have a camera crew on hand just to capture it, because I knew 100 million people are going to have iPhone videos.
Oh yeah.
And I thought, wow, it might be cool to do take a song and make a little video for it and put like that on YouTube, and because everybody's going to have their own camera.
Right.
So it would be cool to have one, maybe with halfway decent sound and stuff like that. And to have just sort of some kind of record of the show. Because this is, it was, paying homage to Henrik. It was a lot of people getting together that hadn't seen each other in a really long time. Not just talking about the band, but also the audience.
Mm.
There was a real feeling of homecoming about it.
Mm.
So I thought it might be cool to have some cameras on hand, and then the show went really well, probably better than we expected it to. The audience was awesome. And it just turned out to be just this really, really cool night. Even though like it rained right up until we were about to play, and there was all kinds of problems the day of the show, dealing with production and everything. The whole show seemed like it was teetering on the edge of happening.
It was right on the edge.
Yeah. So when it finally did, and it just went well, it was, I was really glad that we had some record of it, recorded.
Yeah.
And then so we started messing around with the recordings, and then had some of the songs mixed by a local engineer here in Austin, Matt Bray. And he did a great job, and it just sounded really cool. And then so we had another guy in Austin that I work with all the time doing videos, and Steve Miller is his name. And he's fantastic. He's done videos for lots of my bands, Jason's band. He does videos for everybody.
Mm.
So he took the footage from the camera crew, and also there's like some people had really good footage just from their phone.
Sure. Nowadays like you get that great footage on your phone.
And so we used some of that, so there's a lot of, when you watch the DVD, there's a lot of feeling of, you're in the audience looking up.
Yeah.
Whereas most of the pro shot cameras were all kind of on stage or right around there. So there's shots from all over. There's shots from behind the stage. There's shots from way out in the front.
That's great.
It just really turned out cool. I thought both Steve Miller and Matt Bray just knocked it out of the park. So it went from being this thing that I hoped would be okay to being this thing that I think is pretty darn cool.
Just blew your mind.
I'm really happy with the way it turned out.
And I heard it. I listened to it, and I told Jason too. I said it sounded fantastic.
Yeah,
it was excellent. Now I haven't seen the video. I've seen a couple clips on YouTube, but I haven't seen the whole show. The DVD,
right? And none of the clips from the DVD have been on YouTube.
Right. Yet. Right. Right.
So. We'll probably put some up, but.
But yeah, great job on that, man.
Thanks. I feel like we kind of lucked out, you know.
Now, let me ask you this. So when you decided to do this reunion, was Jason always the top guy? Is like you said, he's the man to do this?
Well, I mean, for one thing, there would be nobody else. Mm-hmm. You know, I said from the beginning, I would only do it if Jason did it. Mm. And Jason and Henrik used to be buddies and, you know, had tons of mutual respect for one another. And, you know, Henrik would bring Jason on stage. Jason would come to all the Texas shows. So
he was a fan of the band as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is sort of funny because, I was thinking about that today. It's like when I joined Dangerous Toys, I was a huge Dangerous Toys fan, right?
Were you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They were like my favorite band.
Nice.
So, you know, so to this day, 28 years later, I'm still just like one of the biggest fans, but I happen to be standing on the stage.
That's got to be so fun.
And sort of the same for Jason with Dirty Looks. He's like, wow, I'm like just a big fan. And that's the way he kind of comes across or came across at the show. To the audience, he's like, I'm one of you. I just dig this music and we're going to celebrate it tonight. So he was really the only person that would be considered, you know, mm-hmm. and he was the only person that I felt like for sure that Henrik would give his stamp of approval.
Mm-hmm. Well, he knocked it out of the park. I mean, y'all did. And everybody looked like they're having a great time. So
yeah, it was awesome. It went way past my expectations.
So it's available on CD and DVD as a combo, right? It comes together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And where can people get that? Is there a website or where do they buy that?
Dirtylooksmusic.com.
Okay.
And also like Amazon and, you know, wherever else.
Oh, so, okay. Okay. So it's available.
Yeah. Not too hard to find. If anybody goes on the Dirty Looks Facebook page, there's links all over that. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, not too hard to find. And we'll have it at the shows too.
Nice. Now, I know there's more Dirty Looks shows coming up. So did that decision to do more shows come after this went so well?
Okay.
So your next show with Dirty Looks, if I get it right, I got it written down here, is on the 29th of July. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's Philly? In Philadelphia at the 2300 Arena, it's called.
Okay.
And that's part of a festival called the Masquerade Festival, put on by Brad Lee Entertainment. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of bands there, right?
Oh, yeah.
That should be a blast.
Yeah. That's going to be really fun.
Yeah. And then after that, you're going back to the same town where you recorded the record, right?
Right. This time to a real venue though. This one's going to be at the Susquehanna Valley, event center.
Okay. Now, is that a Dirty Looks show or is that another festival type show?
No, that's Dirty Looks. We have an opening act and Dirty Looks, which means we can play a little longer. Like the show we played in Sealands Grove that's on the DVD, mm-hmm. that's 17 songs, which way longer than any Dirty Looks show.
Yeah, that's a lot.
You know, in all my time with the band.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, we played a bunch, and we'll play a good long show in Sealands Grove as well.
Is Sealands Grove, is that where you guys are from?
That's where the band originated. That's Jack Pyers lives in Sealands Grove. And so Henrik originally lived with Jack when he was sort of putting it together. He had come back, Henrik had come back from California, where they had released like one or two albums in California. And then that fell apart and he came back and he was like, okay, I'm going to put it back together here in Pennsylvania. This is just as I understand the story, because this is all before me.
Yeah, before you.
So he hooked up with Jack, and so he was living with Jack, and then and they recorded an album called In Your Face, which is just an awesome album.
Now that album had some songs that were on Cool from the Wire, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It had a few, and then it also had a lot of like new ones.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, what happened with that was that when we showcased for Atlantic Records, Atlantic loved the In Your Face album, and they just wanted to remix that and put it out and have that be that. But then we recorded some more demos, and the demos had myself and Gene Barnett on them. And so they got a hold of the demos. And they said, oh, wait, hold on. New plan. Let's bring in a great producer, and let's put the band in the studio and really do it for real. So they brought in Max Norman, who had produced, you know, Ozzy and Megadeth and all these other bands. And so off to the Carriage House in Stamford, Connecticut, we went, and that's when we recorded Cool from the Wire.
And how long were you in the band before you guys signed with Atlantic? Or did you come in after they signed?
I was with the band not quite a year.
Okay.
Beforehand. So it was pretty quick. Uh-huh. And during that year, we were going, driving up and down the East Coast, playing shows in my Chevette.
Okay.
Actually after I moved up to my Chevette, we had, you know,
that was an upgrade.
Yeah. There's we did a lot of traveling in some $300 cars. So
yeah. Well, you do what you got to do.
So yeah. Yeah, so we played just all the time. Just up and down, just the East Coast though.
Right.
And down south, you know, Carolinas and stuff like that. And so we would be making the rounds, and so each of us for those shows were paid $5 a day.
Nice. You're making
that
money.
Time. Yeah.
$5 a day, yes.
Yep. As a matter of fact, when I joined the band, Henrik kind of tried to talk me out of it. He's like, listen, dude, we really don't have all that much going on. He said, the money, there's no money. You know, you're going to starve. We just get out there and play, you know. You had a very realistic viewpoint on how likely it was to become successful and all that.
Right. And he just laid it out there.
Which he might have just also been testing me.
Well, I was going to say that's genius of him, because if you would have come in thinking, you know, you're making all this money, and then found out that wasn't the case, you could be gone. So if he just lays it out there, look, this is how it is.
Right. So he said all that, and I'm like, Yeah, so when do we start? Because I was, you know, I just was up for anything.
So you really felt strong about the music too then as well, probably, huh?
Well, that was the thing. Before I auditioned, all I knew about the band was that Jack Pierce was in it. And it was rock. So I drove from Rochester, New York to Pennsylvania, to Selins Grove, to audition for this band just because Jack Pierce was in it.
So you knew Jack Pierce,
huh?
Did you know Jack?
Uh-uh.
You just knew of him.
I knew of him because he played bass for the band Harpo. And Harpo were sort of gods on the East Coast and gods to me. And it was actually through Harpo that I found out about the audition too.
I see. So your audition, you walk in a room and just, you learn the songs, I'm assuming, or did you guys just jam, or how'd that go?
Yeah, they had the In Your Face album, and they just put it on, and I just learned the songs like on the spot.
Oh, really?
And then we jammed, and it was cool. And then Henrik told me I had gotten the gig. And then I had the album and went home and listened to it. I'm like, this is fantastic. You know,
made the right decision.
Yeah. And I was really excited. So,
yeah. So you guys go in and you re-record your first major label record, right? Cool. Yeah. From Hawaii was your first major label record.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Max Norman's in there. Now, did you guys have a say in that, or did Atlantic just say, here's Max?
As far as I know, he was just sort of, I think our manager got him into it.
Mm-hmm.
I think our manager brought him in. But I, of course, knew who he was because, like, my favorite guitar player, Randy Rhodes, was recorded. The first two Ozzy albums were Max Norman. So I knew, you know, it was like, oh, Max Norman, you know.
Yeah.
That was a big deal.
Yeah, he did a lot of bands. He did some good stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And has and continues to.
Yeah.
He was supposed to come. He had planned to come to the show in Selins Grove, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really? He couldn't make it?
Yeah. Yeah, and then he got a session right at the last minute, and he said he couldn't make it.
So you go in.
Hopefully, maybe this year he'll be able to come because it would be great to see him again.
Yeah, yeah. So you go in, record it. I've got it right here, by the way. Look at that, my original cassette tape.
So this is a funny story. We did this long photo session in New York City where we went all over the whole city, and it was cold out, and we had on the inside of that there's pictures from we're in an alley by Wall Street, I think.
It's not on the cassette.
Oh, it's not.
No. Oh, well.
Well, anyway. the expectation was that we would use some form of those photos for the album cover.
Right.
And so Henrik tells me over the phone, he says, yeah, so like the record company wants to just put my face on the cover. And he said it in a way where I couldn't tell if he was joking or not.
Mm-hmm. Is that that?
So, yeah, yeah. So that was just a close-up from, a group shot.
Oh.
Of, which was in that alley by Wall Street in New York City.
Come to think of it, on this cassette tape, there's no band picture. Whoops.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah, the vinyl album had a few different pictures on it. Hey?
Yeah, I'm sure it did.
Huh. But yeah, so that was not Henrik's idea at all.
No.
He was a little bit, you know, he's like, well, you know, that's what they want to do.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, I mean, it came out incredible. This is probably, Dirty Looks is probably in my top 10 bands from that era.
Oh,
and
awesome.
Dangerous Toys. So you're in two of my top 10 bands.
How about that?
I got that other one here, Turn of the Screw, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dangerous Toys. I got them all.
Yeah. Uh-huh. On cassette. But
I still have all my cassettes and my vinyl, but I didn't have those on vinyl. So moved up to cassettes by the time. So Cool from the Wire, great album. Who did you go on tour with? Because I used to go see all the shows back then, and I don't remember you guys ever coming through where I lived. I lived down in Florida, and I'm sure you've played there, but I just never caught a show.
We play, well, our first couple shows of our first tour, the opening act was Skid Row.
Opening for you guys.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And then we played pretty much headlining shows just coast to coast.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time we played a few shows with LA Guns. We played a few shows with Kiss, which was, you know, beyond awesome.
Yeah, that had to be great.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool. But for the most part, headlining shows.
Okay. Okay. And how long did you guys tour?
It was for the better part of that year, I guess, where we went out, we did the first few months and then came home and then we went out some after that, and then, you know, work started for the new album.
Right, and that's why I was asking, because I think Cool from the Wire came out around 88, right around there, I think, right?
Yeah.
And then Turn of the Screw came out like a year later.
Right.
89, so that's pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
So they got you right back into the studio.
Yeah.
Okay. Now there you were going to work with Bo Hill, right? And that didn't work out.
Right.
What happened with that? Why was he just not the guy for you guys?
Yeah, I guess it wasn't the right sound. I think he wanted it to be slicker than the band did.
Mm-hmm. You guys are more of just a raw sound.
I think so.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So who did you end up working with on that record? Because that one came out incredible as well.
Yeah, that was John Jansen. And he had worked with a whole bunch of people kind of from back in the day, you know, Alice Cooper and even like on Hendrix stuff and stuff like that. So he understood that raw sound really well.
So then Turn of the Screw, was that bigger? Did that turn out bigger, more successful than Cool from the Wire?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so because like the Nobody Rides for Free video got a lot more airplay than say Oh Ruby. Back in, you know, in the 80s, sort of the amount of airplay on MTV that you get has a big bearing on sales.
Mm-hmm.
So on the strength of the video for Nobody Rides for Free, which is its own story in itself, I think it did better. I'm not really sure about the numbers though.
Uh-huh. What's the story behind that?
Oh, it was just shot in an alley in downtown Los Angeles, and they put a light rig across these two buildings. Here I go with this microphone.
There's that mic. Keeps getting in your way.
Yeah. I'm just going to keep my hands on.
Tie them up.
They had actors coming in that were like they had a midget police officer that
in the video.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to look that up. I don't remember that.
Yeah. In the very very beginning of the video, they show there's this homeless guy that lived there in the alley. So
he got in the video.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you paid him.
And they hose the whole alley down with like fire hose, which really didn't make it smell any better.
Just made it wet.
It just made it wet, which made it look cool, I guess.
Yeah.
And there's like a methadone clinic in the building that was on one of the sides. And so they we're keeping them up at night, I guess. And they're throwing orange peels down at us as we were doing the video.
How long did that take to shoot that video? Were you there a long time?
It seemed about 8 hours. I think we started shortly after it got dark and wrapped it by, not too late into the night. That's with all the, all the different scenes with the vignettes and all that. Vignettes are the characters in a video.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. Now I know.
That's what they call
So, okay. So then you go out on tour for that record. And then that was the last record you were on, isn't it? For a while?
No.
Were you on the next record?
Yeah. So we went out on tour for that record. And that's when we finally got in a bus. That was nice. We had done the whole first tour in a van. Because the idea was, okay, we need to, save up the money.
Sure.
But the buzz was huge about the band by Turn of the Screw. So
right.
We were out in a bus at that point.
Yeah. You guys are styling now.
Yeah. So we're out for quite a while and then came back and we did demos for a new album. And we did, so those were like basically recording another album, which ended up being released as another album, but it was called Bootlegs because it was really just the demos of these songs for the record company. So, I thought Bootlegs was actually a pretty cool album too.
Mm. Was that on Atlantic?
No, that got released on another label because by that point Atlantic had dropped. Atlantic and all of the major labels had dropped the Rock bands.
Mm-hmm. This was the early 90s?
This is the early 90s by this point, yeah.
Okay. And then, so you left, or what happened with Dirty Looks? I mean, did you leave? Did they, you guys just split? What happened with the, at the end?
At the end, well, we did the last tour, which we got Gene back in. Mm-hmm. So he did the last tour and that was a blast. We had a lot of fun, probably one of my favorite, Dirty Looks tours.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, it was just real relaxed and fun. Then I was home on a brief break and got a letter, from Henrik and he said, I need to call it a day.
A letter
in the
not
mail.
A phone call, a letter. I know we didn't have email. I don't think we had email then, right?
No.
A letter. Okay. So you can't even respond unless you write another letter, right?
Right. Yeah. So then eventually we did talk on the phone, and he was like, yeah, you know, need to call this a day.
Did he say why, or he was just over it?
He said he wanted to dry out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what it said in the letter.
Sure. You still have that letter?
I wish I did. I mean, back then you don't think about that kind of stuff.
Right.
But yeah, I've thought about that, you know, since. It's like, man.
Yeah.
I didn't hang on to that.
So then shortly after that is when you joined Toys, right?
Joined Dangerous Toys, which was actually the second time that I was asked to join the band. The first time I was asked to join the band was because I didn't even talk about Five Easy Pieces, which I also played on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I played on several, half a dozen anyway, Dirty Looks records.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I was, I was in the band for 7 years, and Henrik and I were roommates for a lot of that.
Mm.
And then even after I left the band, they would still use songs of mine and recordings that I played on too. And then this was probably 11 or 12 years ago, right around the time when we were talking about that reunion thing that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The Gasoline album came out, and I played on some of that and had a couple of my songs on there, and then we did Super Deluxe. Mm-hmm. Which both myself and Jack also played on that, and this is you know, relatively recent, 12 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or so. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the, I think there was one more Dirty Looks record after that, mm-hmm. which was, you know, primarily just Henrik. So, mm-hmm. So the Five Easy Pieces album, that was once again with Max Norman.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So both Gene and Jack had left the band. This was probably around 92 or 93. And Henrik and I and a couple different drummers and bass players. Jim Harris played drums on a tour, and Kerry DeVore also played drums on a tour. Dave Nero played bass, and Brian Perry played bass.
You guys had a lot of members, right?
It didn't start the revolving door thing until after I left.
Okay. Yeah, because your list is like huge if you look it up.
Yeah, but that was all.
Yeah.
That was all post 94.
Gotcha.
Up until then, you know, I mean, the whole time I was in the band, there was, what, 3 drummers and 3 bass players, I think.
Mm-hmm.
4 for a short period of time. We went to California and recorded the Five Easy Pieces album with Max Norman on the Sony Rock World label. Which was run by David Krebs, and David Krebs is the guy who managed Aerosmith back in, you know, back in the day, and Ted Nugent and AC/DC. So he was the manager of everything that was big then. You know, talking about early 80s, late 70s, you know.
Right.
So it was a huge deal to be associated with him. And that label and everything. So when that album, right when that album came out, I did get asked to join Dangerous Toys.
And you declined. You declined?
Yeah, I did. Because, you know, we had this tour. So that was the fun tour I was telling you about in the last tour.
Sure.
So after that, they found out that the Dirty Looks had dissolved and asked me again to come to Texas, which at that time I was like, oh, yeah, come join my favorite band. I think I will do that.
Right. That's fantastic. So when you joined Dangerous Toys, what record were they on? Pissed?
That was the Pissed album, yeah.
Did you play on that album?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I actually liked that album.
I do too.
You know, I found it a little later, but I it's a good album.
I think it's one that a lot of people would be surprised if they discovered it. I think it was kind of, you know, that label, which was a local Austin label, went under shortly after that.
Mm.
So there wasn't, we did a long tour for that one. And then we came home and wrote for the next album, which by that point, grunge was in full force, right?
Yeah.
So to try to write anything that sounded like T's and P's and was against the rules.
Mm.
So our whole thing was, okay, do whatever you want. It just can't sound anything like anything that we've done before.
And it didn't.
And it sure didn't. So it sounded so different that in the studio, the producer just sort of joked. He's like, well, here's the artist formerly known as Dangerous Toys, you know?
Yeah.
Because it was so different. We even did consider changing the name. I mean, yeah.
Did you like that album?
There was nothing you could do. What?
Did you like that album?
Yeah.
You did?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, we were all... yeah, I think we were the only ones that liked it. But we're pretty proud of it. It was so different from anything we had done, and kind of different from anything anybody. I had some great songs on it, I thought.
Yeah.
Whether or not you like certainly if people that liked, say, the first three albums might not have gotten it. But if you listen to it as if it was a different band, which, like I said, we even did consider changing the name, because back then, like, you know, an 80s hair band couldn't win. There's nothing you could do.
Yeah, having the name coming from that era almost would hurt you at that time.
There's nothing you could do.
Yeah.
You couldn't do anything like you had done before. And then if you do anything else, then, we were in the same boat as like every other band from that era.
Mm-hmm.
And so you heard a lot of the 80s hair bands, experimenting with some other different things.
Sure.
Cause there's not really anything else to do. Mm-hmm. Given the era.
Yeah. Did you guys take time off, or has Dangerous Toys always been going here and there? Like, did you guys split at one point, or were you?
No. The band isn't, we've done a handful of shows at least for all 28 years that I've been in the band.
Nice. That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure. I wanted to ask
you. But after after the artist, which we were out on tour for the artist formerly known as Dangerous Toys, that album.
Yeah.
And while we were out on tour, the label folded.
Mm.
And so no more tour support. And so we came home, and from that point on, you know, everybody got busy in other bands and all that and all that. You know, Jason and I started Broken Teeth. And
great band, by the way. Thanks. I love that band too.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And several, you know, other bands. And but the whole time through, we've always been playing shows.
Okay. Okay. And now, you know, it seems like that style of music, Dangerous Toys, Dirty Looks, that seems like it's more popular now than it has been in a while.
Yeah, I'm noticing, and I'm finding out that there's a lot of like 20 somethings that are all, you know, that are getting into that kind of music, and it's like it's happening again, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll never be like it was, but I think I agree. It's like it's making its own little comeback.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the generation that enjoyed it back in the '80s, you know, they still enjoy it now.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the new generation kind of getting associated with or familiar with that, and they're digging it. It's a cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when you do your Dirty Look shows, did you have an idea that it was going to be a pretty good crowd, or were you unsure? Or
I was told just from you know, friends I had in Sealand Grove that the buzz was really big. So I wasn't surprised when a big crowd showed up.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now let me ask you this. Are you going to do more Dirty Looks records? Are you going to record or no?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I mean, it's...
That would be interesting, and I only say that because...
Been discussed, but then it's like, you know, whereas it would be myself and Gene and Jack, who played on, you know, Cool from the Wire and Turn of the Screw and Bootlegs and, you know, and on through other albums too, I don't know. The answer is a firm I don't know.
The possibilities there.
I guess so. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it would be fun, and I think it would turn out well. I mean, everything that Jason touches turns to gold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's just, you know, and him and I have 28 years worth of writing together.
Right.
So.
Be interesting to see you guys writing for that, because it'd be like, okay, is this Dangerous Toys or is this Dirty Looks?
Well, it wouldn't. I don't think it would sound like Dangerous Toys at all.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
No. Yeah. We will see. And yeah.
Now, you are writing a new Dangerous Toys record, correct?
Yeah, there's lots of songs done.
Yeah. Oh, completed, ready to go.
That are ready to record.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And some tracking has started, but it moves along real slow.
Yeah, what's taking it so long? Like, is it just, I mean, what's the holdup? Because I had Jason on this show a while ago. Long time ago, before I was doing video, it was just audio. And he was naming off all these new Dangerous Toys songs. He was telling me about it. And here we are, still no album. So what's taking it so long?
I don't know. Just everybody's busy and
just life.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but on the good side, I mean, we went for many, many years where sort of the feeling was nobody would be interested in anything new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when a band from back in the day puts out a new album, everybody's like, okay, sometimes. So we were kind of that mind. But then in the last several years, though, it's been like, well, hey, let's put out some new stuff just because, you know, we can.
Right. And now you can even test the waters and just put out a single.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And we may do that, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
But we have been playing... we have been playing new songs live, and they've been going over, so that's cool.
How many new songs do you put in your set?
We have two that we're that we play in the set, and then getting ready for some other ones.
Okay, that's got to be hard because then to add a new song, you got to take out an old one that people know.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. So we generally would only do that for like our headlining shows. Mm-hmm. So we have a bunch of festival shows coming up. Mm-hmm. And for those shows, that's just the hits, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So which means we play most of the first record and some of the second record.
Mm-hmm. Second record, Hellacious Acres, that was a good one too. I like mm-hmm. that. I really like that one.
Yeah.
So Dangerous Toys shows, you got what? August? Got some in August, right? Is that, that's a festival in Tennessee?
Yeah, the Monsters on the Mountain.
Yes, that's
festival.
It.
Monsters on the Mountain. I think that's August 20th. Okay. And yeah, that's going to be really cool. It's we do the Monsters of Rock cruise, which has, you know, all the, a lot of big bands from back in the day and even sure. some newer ones on there. And so we've done five of those, I think.
Five cruises. And,
yeah.
Okay.
Four or five. And so this Monsters on the Mountain is the Monsters of Rock, but on land.
Gotcha. Same so, kind of thing, just on land.
Same kind of thing. And also probably a lot of the same people coming, which the Monsters of Rock cruise ends up being this really cool community sort of event because you're on the boat with these people for 5 days.
Right.
And after year after year after year, you see all the same people. So it gets to be like, you know, you're at a show or walking down the hall and, you know, you see a bunch of people that you recognize and
right.
a bunch of people, you know, recognize
awesome.
You and it's this big family.
Yeah, it looks like
a family.
They look and, like a blast, these cruises. I've never been on one. Maybe one day I'll get on one, but yeah, it looks like fun.
You gotta go. You gotta go. So fun.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to Monsters on the Mountain hopefully being like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
where get to hang out with and see a bunch of people that I would see on the boat.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's another festival coming up too. And that one's in Texas and that one's called Rockin' Boots, I think. And Rockin' that's Boots. That's October 1st.
Okay. Okay.
And we have another show in between there, also in Fort Worth. And that'll be a headlining show, so we'll be busting out, you know, the newer stuff there.
Right, right. Now, in your spare time, if you have any, you do online guitar lessons, right?
Yeah. I teach guitar and keyboard and bass and drums and, you know.
So you play all those instruments?
Singing, yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that either.
Hmm.
Would, down,
as a matter of fact, part of how I got the Dangerous Toys gig was I had recorded an EP at Jack Pryor's house, as a matter of fact. This was it was after Jack had left the band, but I was still in the band.
Okay.
But so I recorded this EP at his house, where I played all the instruments, guitar, drums, bass, and did all the vocals and everything. And so that was sort of kind of demo tape, more or less, for Toys, because here I was, you know, doing lead vocals, and they needed somebody that was a strong singer. So they were like, oh, well, listen, there's, you know, guitar and vocals. And so, yeah.
Was guitar, was that your first instrument?
No, drums was.
Drums. It's always drums. When I talk to people, they always start out with drums.
Yeah, yeah. I was a drummer for 6 or 7 years, and I played in bands, all different kinds of bands, all around town. Rock band. I played in a working jazz band.
Wow.
Yeah, several different bands, and then sort of a skydiving accident, more or less, brought me to playing guitar.
Oh, geez. Skydiving. What happened?
Well, I broke my ankle skydiving, and so at that point, I couldn't bring my drums back and forth to rehearsal. At the time, we were rehearsing at somebody else's house, as opposed to at my house, which is most of my bands rehearsed at my house. So my drums stayed there, and ended up playing guitar just constantly. And but the whole time I was playing drums, I was also learning guitar from the different, I played with some good guitar players. And so I was always, you know, how'd you do that? So
right.
You know, I was guitar geeking before I sort of made the jump. And then I would play for a while. I played in bands playing guitar, and then in other bands playing drums. And I was sort of straddling that line for a while. And then I decided, well, you know, I'm going to get mediocre at both of these, or I can just go with my real passion, and that's guitar. And that's when I started playing just like a million hours a day.
Oh, wow. Okay. So which one is easier to teach online? Because it seems like teaching online would be a little difficult with like guitar or bass, just because of the hand positioning and stuff. I mean,
no, guitar and bass and even keyboard is all works really well online. If you have like the right setup, so you have to have you know, good sound, and you have the added advantage that, like, when we're on Zoom, you can record little parts of the lesson or the whole lesson and send it to them. So
I see. And so they can go back and watch it.
Yeah So I've found it to be kind of just as good or better than the in-person lessons. So I've changed from teaching in-person lessons to just exclusively Zoom, and my students are all cool with that. And so now I'm not limited to local students. I have students from all over the country.
Yeah That's excellent.
So it works out really great for me and for the students. You know, they can practice right after the lesson, instead of having to drive home, you know. Get the video of the lesson. I think it works out well. It took a little getting used to.
Sure. Now, have you been doing this a while, or did the pandemic get you kind of into this way?
I had been doing it previously, but with the pandemic, it was that prompted the shift to do it. You know, you didn't have a choice.
Sure.
So, yeah, that prompted the shift over to just doing it on Zoom.
Okay. Now, if somebody wants to get lessons from you, where can they go to get information on that?
They can message me on Facebook, or here I'm going to give my email address, which is simply paulliedell@gmail.com.
Okay. Just hit you up and you'll get back to him.
Yeah.
Nice. That's fantastic. All right, Paul. Well, listen, man, I enjoyed talking to you this evening.
Yeah, it was fun. I appreciate you having me on your show.
Yeah, man. All right. So the CD, Cool from the Speedway, CD and DVD is out there available, Dirty Looks, which is excellent. I definitely recommend people check it out. Dangerous Toys and Dirty Looks will be doing some shows here shortly.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I didn't mention that Dirty Looks is also going to be on the Monsters of Rock cruise in April.
You did not mention that.
Yeah, I should mention that.
So that's a separate Dirty Looks and Dangerous Toys, or just Dirty Looks?
No, just Dirty Looks.
Okay. Have you ever done a Dirty Looks and Dangerous Toys show? That would be brutal on Jason.
No, that wouldn't be cool. That would be just kind of weird.
Yeah, it would.
I mean, it would be weird for us. It wouldn't be. It wouldn't be weird for the audience. I mean, you know, but it would be weird for us.
Yeah. No, I understand. I understand. All right, bud. Well, listen, I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks again.